Ultimately, this month's radio show is going to be on two subjects. One's Dr. Pete's newsletter, which is language and criticism, basically outlining the authoritarian attitude towards dissemination of information and steering the public consciousness in a very controlled way. So just to highlight why things are the way they are and why they shouldn't be that way. And then the other half of the show, which may actually run over until next month, is exposing all the documents and all the proof and evidence that Carla Rothenberg, a PhD graduate, managed to find out about blatant, obvious lies, which were included, and misinformation that was included, and misrepresentation that was made, supporting the estrogen industry, when actually the papers were there very clearly outlining the negative effects of estrogen and the positive effects of progesterone. Now, and Dr. Pete's a big proponent of progesterone, and I think we'll see, if we haven't already, in the months and the years that we've been doing the show with him, that he's been supporting and advocating the use for women, and or men in some instances, to be using progesterone. Why it is such a beneficial anti-inflammatory hormone, and why it is that estrogen, which was always maintained as the female hormone that women needed, especially in menopause, why it's such a dangerous chemical to even be promoting, especially after menopause. So I wanted to start the show by reading out a section that last month was going to prelude this month's talk. So saying it's basically, it's not a conspiracy. It's declassified fact that the CIA, the CCF, and the Rockefeller and Ford foundations are all implicated in molding and steering culture and belief systems to their doctrines, and thereby controlling them as high priests. It's not surprising it happens. After all, if it wasn't them, the vacuum left would be filled by others. It's just a moral issue of deception and greed behind the construct, which is shameful. So through misrepresentation and bad science, the anti-cancer benefits of progesterone were skewed and suppressed in favor of estrogen, and the estrogen industry's multi-billion dollar production of contraception and HRT fueled massive profits and a propagandistic population reduction religion. Because of this skewed information, progesterone was added to the California Prop 65 list of known carcinogens. Big pharma interests and lobbying, happy to keep it this way because of financial interest, maintained the disinformation, and academia followed compliance in doctrine and education. So before we get into the expose surrounding the misinformation regarding the effects of estrogen versus progesterone, I wanted to start the show by outlining the truth regarding the criticism in that during the last 10 to 15 years, Dr. Pete's newsletter mentioned that several people have written about the lack of major transformative ideas in science since the middle of the last century, and that the status quo is devoted to maintaining this. So essentially, the newsletter that Dr. Pete wrote, and this is his May newsletter, outlined that the very war, and I will call it a war, against true science was being waged by a very egalitarian and authoritarian industry with both regulators, lobbyists, government, and other big interests at the heart of maintaining a status quo of domination of the market. It's not a conspiracy theory, it's just a fact that vested interests like pharmaceutical companies generating billions and billions of dollars in revenue with drugs produce reports about drugs that some of which we find later on were found to be very dangerous. And obviously people can think about drugs that have hit the headlines as being very damaging and dangerous products that were withdrawn. But then also there is the fact that lots of research is actually buried. Some of the research that shows things are not that good for you are skewed. The reports and the results are skewed in favor of the decision that's wanted by the drug manufacturers. And also evidence to show that a drug's effect is actually very negative is often buried. Now, it's certainly a case in point of maintaining a control over an industry which is quite a monopolistic industry. And the FDA, again, have been implicated in being complicit in this deception. So his newsletter was basically comparing the academic and the sort of libertarian side of academia, whether it's the humanities, including the philosophy, the arts, and a kind of creative thinking side of the education system, versus the reductionistic and scientific side of the equation, which was born out of the rapid increase in knowledge. But that rapid increase in knowledge itself brought its own problems, because it could be seen as being steered in a certain direction, and that direction ultimately, and I think it's fairly common normal bias, that it was steered in the direction of those powers that had the most control and wanted to maintain the narrative that was important for them. So when we do get Dr. Pete on, we'll question him about the findings that he's produced in his newsletter, and then we'll go probably about 7:30 or so to open up a discussion about Carla Rothenberg. And then, as usual, we'll take callers from 7:30 until 8 o'clock. And then people are very welcome to ask questions outside of the subject, but it's always good when we keep on topic. So if people do have questions surrounding either the estrogen industry, progesterone and estrogen's effects, or whether or not there are people that have direct experience with the authoritarian academic mindset that people come across.
Another thing I wanted to mention is that funding for these natural hormones that drug companies are not able to patent becomes a problem, because if there's no monetary incentive for them to do studies, then studies are not done on such things that are not patentable, such as thyroid and progesterone, because they're natural hormones.
Okay, so some of those things, I just wanted to mention, who doesn't recognize the term MK Ultra? I'm sure quite a few of you have heard the term MK Ultra before. It was actually a very real exercise in producing a situational mind control to not only maintain compliance and order, but to physically, mentally direct the minds of those subjects that were under that influence to be basically willing pawns to do the bidding of the organizations that were controlling them. So we've all heard about the CIA. We've heard about the Rockefeller Foundation. We've
sounds
heard
like
about
the Bourne movies.
Well, it's a little bit, it sounds conspiracy theory, folks, but you know what? Truth really is stranger than fiction. It's not until people start waking up and turning around and looking over their shoulder that they start seeing things are not actually the way that they're told things are, and that's just the kind of limited brain space that they want you in, so that you don't argue and that you don't buck the system.
Question authority.
Okay, so I think, do we have Dr. Pete on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay, Dr. Pete, thanks for joining us. Okay, so I've given an outline of what it is we'd like to discuss. The first being the newsletter that you produced on the language and criticism, and how the authoritarianism within the educational system has been motivated and fueled by big business and big money, whether it's the Ford or Rockefeller Foundations or the CIA, and how this very much controls the narrative, especially within education, about what it is that is and isn't published and what we are or aren't expected to know.
The gene theory is really the best basis for an authoritarian theory of society and organization of society. Konrad Lorenz developed the idea of genetically based behavior for Hitler, for the Nazi Party, as the ideology for the race supremacism, and elimination of inferior people and so on. And exactly that ideology was taken up by American biologists as soon as the war was over. And Chomsky's idea of generative grammar, it's really structurally identical to Konrad Lorenz's genetically based theory of behavior. Chomsky's research is financed by, has been since the 1950s, financed by the Pentagon for use in war making. But it's really the same ideology that Lorenz developed for social control and genocide.
Okay, so I mentioned earlier on a little bit about what was brought out in the document here, that the Rockefeller and Ford Foundations, as well as the CIA, actively identified individuals who represented particular features of their ideologies who could exert effects over organizations and people. And it was only the humanities, the languages, the arts, literature, philosophy, etc., that was a major obstacle to this authoritarian civilization. And the funding for this pro-authoritarian direction included prestigious publishing houses, major mass magazines, Hollywood, and broadcasting to dictate the position.
I gave the example of C.P. Snow's famous article and lecture in the 1950s on the two cultures. That was the ideology was that science was the basis of the true culture, and the humanities, art, philosophy, literature, religion, all of these things were obstacles to the progress of civilization.
Right, because these would have been much more altruistic, compassionate, looking for the better good of civilization and humanity, and not at all vested financial interests.
That's why they were called the humanities.
There you go.
Because they were humane. Yeah. So what were you saying? You said grammar was structured around this ideology?
It started in the 1930s. Chomsky wasn't the originator of the idea. It came out of the early computer thinking that you needed a language that wasn't complex and fluid, if you were going to put all knowledge into computers. Things had to be absolutely self-contained. And so they developed a theory of reality in which the reality was made up of self-contained units in which their position in space and time didn't affect them essentially, because they wanted a language to have a one-to-one relationship to reality. And the computers could only handle absolutely discrete units of information. So the ideology of reality was set so that it worked in computers. And that fit with the idea that each of our units of meaning is determined genetically by a discrete molecular structure. And so behavior would be reduced to these discrete units. And grammar was simply one of the types of behavior that could be genetically determined. And so Chomsky was just one of the people completing this theory that genes control behavior, grammar is one of our behaviors. And so language can be reduced to these units.
Okay. I mentioned a little bit before, while we were getting you on here, that also the program, the MK Ultra program, came out of the same CIA desire to control, and very much through language, the it was called the command and control, wasn't it? I think the tenet.
You can read some of the Pentagon's books describing what they're doing on the internet.
So it does go on. It always blows me away. The more outlandish something sounds, the more realistic it is to actually having happened. And I never fails to amaze me that sometime down the road, even when I am tentatively cautious about adopting that position, that down the road, there's more and more evidence that comes out to compel me to believe that this was actually the way it was. it's a little bit of an aside here, but I remember when I first came to this country, 2001, it was in 2002 and 3 that we were starting to visit different stores and seeing what accounts we could raise to, you know, produce, send our products that we produced. And I was talking to one of the people in the store, and probably a 23-year-old female, you know, not an older person, very kind of hip with it, young and just kind of eyes open. And after the end of the presentation that we gave her, she said, she started going on about chemtrails. And she said, yeah, it's disgusting, you know, the chemtrails up in the sky, they're just coalescing and forming this big mat cloud, and they're cooling the earth down. And oh, I'm starting up this coalition here in California to campaign against it. And I just looked at her, and I didn't know what to say. I was speechless. And I looked at Sarah, and then we kind of left, and we got back into the car, and I said, wow, that girl is nuts. And you know what? I maintained that position here for a couple of years because I didn't really know anything about chemtrails. It was not something that I was looking at. I wasn't really looking sideways. I was just keeping my head down working. And then slowly but surely, all the evidence was coming out, and I could not believe it. It sounded so outlandish, but it was so true. And so here we are today with not only chemtrails, but we've got all the GMO integration of different biological compounds that are now in the atmosphere or in the food or in the water. Then we've got the nanoparticles that are potentially messing things up, and the whole genetic basis by which tomatoes have been spliced with fish or, you know, whatever. The more wild it is, actually, wake up, folks, and take a better look at it, because you know what? It's kind of hiding in plain sight, and they're just hoping that you're so dumb and you're so mind brainwashed and just mindless, just watching TV and just going to work and keeping alive, paying the bills, that you don't have time to look anywhere. So when we first started this discussion here years ago, Ask Your Herb Doctor, we were looking very much on a kind of counterculture kind of way, looking at alternatives, with alternative medicine being our background. And I'm very pleased when we met you, because you were very much supporting a lot of the things that we'd thought about before that were very much true. And a lot of other things. So the whole thing, MK Ultra, the CIA involvement, the Rockefeller Foundation, the whole end of the Second World War, the formation of these big councils and organizations to control the planet. I mean, it's not that far-fetched. It really is actually quite true, in fact. And so between the World Health Organization and the European Union, with all their influence, are very much wanting to control the narrative, to tell us the way things are. And drugs and drug research is just another arm of that, which, again, multi-billion dollar powerful industry with powerful lobbying in government. So when we do find out later on, in the rare instances when we get told that some of these drugs were crippling people or causing more cancer or just doing more harm than good, we have to remember that that tenet of medicine is first do no harm. And I think bringing out the discussion with vaccines, that the vaccine makers are indemnified against all blame, really just lays it open that they are very much hiding behind a government protection that enables a system to proceed pretty much unchecked. And
part of the control system is convincing people that medicine is really good for them,
right?
Covering up the actual facts of vaccination. But the total cancer picture, for example, has, I think it's been fraudulent since the turn of the century. 25 years ago, when Donna Shalala declared that the cancer war was being won,
right,
I looked at the statistics and saw that she was using fraudulent statistics to declare victory in 1994. And I predicted then that they weren't going to be able to keep using the present statistics to continue winning the war on cancer, because the baby boomers would be reaching the cancer age in the year 2000. In that year, the National Statistics Bureau shifted that they no longer give raw data on cancer mortality, but only age-adjusted figures. So it's almost impossible to to put together a picture of what's really happening. But in a few situations, like young women with breast cancer, there is a very great increase among young women, and both incidence and mortality from breast cancer. So they are doing their best to cover up the figures for things like cancer, asthma, all of the degenerative diseases, the effects of vaccination, and so on.
Well, it's follow the money, and if they're not going to fund a study, then we're not going to hear the truth. It's like the radiologist says he sees birth defects in women who use fertility treatment, and you ask the fertility specialist, and they say, no, that's not a fact, because it hasn't been studied. And why hasn't it been studied? Because there's no money to pay for the studies.
Again, it reminds me what you were talking about, Dr. Pete, and you've mentioned it quite a few times, that when you were pursuing your PhD, you would spend hours and hours in the library looking through abstracts and looking through chemical abstracts and database information to find, supporting or refuting evidence for whatever proposition you were trying to make. And that quite soon after that, I think you're talking about the 50s, the libraries suddenly started pulling all their printed reference material out of the libraries and were starting to turn to a digitized format, where those papers that were written in the 1900s and up to the 1950s that showed very good science-based research that was done in many different areas was suddenly not available anymore.
I used to use biological abstracts and chemical abstracts, which they had back to 1910. And it filled a whole huge room. Each year there were about 30 or 40 pounds of books of abstracts printed. And suddenly that whole room full of abstracts disappeared about 10 or 15 years ago. And I asked the librarian where they were, and they had been moved to a storage basement. And I said, well, can I ask for particular years of volumes? And they said, no, they aren't labeled.
They're not indexed.
Yeah.
Gosh. Oh, my goodness. All right. So
that's why they call it the healthcare industry.
Okay, so it's 7:30 now, and from 7:30 till the end of the show, people are invited to call in with any questions related or unrelated to both Dr. Pete's newsletter on the language and criticism, basically the authoritarian model that we've been raised with, very much pro-government authoritarian control of our thoughts and our minds with information they want us to know. Hiding the information perhaps in plain sight sometimes for those things that are counter to that. And then we're going to carry on the rest of this show from 7:30 on now until the end of the show, breaking down Carla Rothenberg's absolutely devastating dissertation, showing all the facts in very, very clear, very, very clear ways to show that the lies purported by the estrogen industry were so blatant. And that actually the protective effects of progesterone were so hidden that it led California's Proposition 65 to list progesterone as a carcinogen with some very, very, very poor science behind it. In fact, no real science, but actually a failure to see the science for what it was.
And hello.
A more all-willing, inclusive attitude to maintain estrogen as the prominent drug manufactured by the markets.
And now they classify breast tumors as progesterone dependent, as well as estrogen dependent.
So we will take callers from 7:30 to the end of the show.
Hello? Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Just go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, so estrogen is also a natural hormone produced by the body. Why is it not good and progesterone is good? And also, progesterone is also in birth control pills, correct?
Dr. Pete can talk about the differences, but not in its biological.
Not an identical form, yeah. So they use progestins as well as estrogens. So
synthesized progesterones.
The body makes a variety of hormones which are essential for acute reactions to stress. Histamine, for example, and antihistamines are beneficial in many, even though the antihistamine is a synthetic drug, turning off a natural drug, it can be very protective, save lives. Estrogen and angiotensin, serotonin, nitric oxide are other intrinsic natural hormones which are very important for acute reactions to stress, but like histamine, when they are continued too long or at too high a concentration, they become deadly. Estrogen was known over 100 years ago, about 1905, it was clearly identified as a cause of cancer.
I thought they knew in the 1800s that the chimney sweeps were developing testicular cancer from the high estrogenic content of the charcoal and the coal.
The identity of estrogen and the carcinogens that wasn't clearly chemically identified until about 1935, 36, 37. Okay. A series of papers came out, and these people warned against the use of any estrogen for treatment because the chemical work made clear that the soot carcinogenesis that was known from the 18th century and the various chemical coal tar carcinogens that were studied through the late 19th and early 20th century, these were seen to be essentially estrogenic, creating inflammation, fibrosis, and cancer, as well as the typical estrogen symptoms. And
hello.
In the 1930s, already progesterone was identified as the protective agent against the carcinogenic and other degenerative effects of both estrogen and the coal tar soot polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. For 20 years, from 1935 to 1955, that work continued, but it was submerged. The story that Carla Rothenberg tells makes it clear what was happening. 1940, 1941, the drug companies intervened to create their own story. First, that estrogen was a female hormone that would support pregnancy and retard aging. Then, in the later 1940s, progesterone to sell products, they realized that progesterone was expensive to make and couldn't be patented. So each company developed a synthetic product that had some of progesterone actions. But testosterone, for example, has some of progesterone's action. It can sustain the uterine condition that's necessary for pregnancy. But many of the chemicals that showed one of the reactions of progesterone, most of them in the late 1940s had also properties of estrogen. And in fact, they would terminate pregnancy. Progesterone was named for the ability to sustain gestation, progestational. But the synthetic chemicals were given that name even though they destroyed gestation, created immediate miscarriage or abortion. So the FDA was basically controlled by the drug companies to falsify language, use language exactly in the opposite sense, so that the progestins that have continued to be used in birth control pills, some of them are strongly estrogenic, and all of them interfere with terminating pregnancy.
And they're not bioidentical progesterone. They're a synthetic progesterone.
Yeah, they're anti-progesterone, actually, but the FDA...
They do not support gestation.
...allows them to be called progestins. And worse than that, the FDA requires that natural progesterone be given the properties of the anti-progesterones. If a synthetic progesterone causes heart disease, for example, then they have to warn that natural progesterone might cause heart disease or deformities of the developing embryo.
Well, and also, I'm aware that estrogen is found in food. It's leaches out of plastic bottles, hormones that are in the oral contraceptive pill are estrogenic. The water supply becomes contaminated with estrogens. What else is there that's estrogenic?
Bisphenol A is one of the most widespread synthetic estrogenic substances used in plastics. It's been known for about 120 years. And the man who developed diethylstilbestrol, DES, in the 1930s was warning that it shouldn't be used in treating humans, but the drug companies immediately put it to use as the female hormone to prevent miscarriage and retard aging, even though it was known to cause miscarriage and to cause cancer.
So we're exposed to a lot of estrogens in our environment, but are we exposed to progesterone, natural bioidentical progesterone, in our foods or in our environment?
Milk naturally contains some progesterone, and it contains a little thyroid and estrogen, but naturally, if the mother was providing a large amount of estrogen to the babies, natural milk would cause feminization of boy babies. So it's obvious that natural milk contains predominantly progesterone.
All right. So I think that wraps that up for that caller. Okay, so I think let's carry on with what I wanted to break down as a revelationary piece of work done by Carla Rottenberg, who's a Harvard PhD student who basically wrote a fairly damning expose on the estrogen industry, especially with reference to HRT and contraceptives, that showed that the damage that was being caused was irrevocable and catastrophic in a lot of cases, and that the estrogen industry was certainly being exposed for what we've already discussed as a previous collusion to maintain control over the production of estrogen, where there was no financial incentive to push progesterone, and the two of them had a very disparate price limit, if you like. I think the estrogen's worth was 1,000 times what progesterone's was, and a lot of the research was actually supporting the evidence to show that estrogen was supporting, you know, bone health, or it was preventing the hot flashes with HRT, and how women needed estrogen, and progesterone in the meantime was buried. I think what I wanted to bring out, we do have another caller on the air here, but I wanted to bring out the whole reason why in California, and always California, isn't it? The Proposition 65 mandate that said that chemicals known to the state of California had to be listed on the label of whatever it was you're buying. Again, there's a little bit of a weird spin on this, and that is left to the legislators and the lawyers, in as much as if it's not used internally, you don't have to put that disclaimer on. But if it is to be used internally, you have to list it. Now, the fact that they put progesterone on the Prop 65 list and not estrogen is beyond me. And we'll get into that after the next caller. So let's take this next caller. Caller, you're on the air. Where are you from?
Oh, good. Hi.
Where are you from, and what's your question?
I have a question. I have called a few times. I'm the one that wakes up every night with a headache.
Okay.
And I have a question. I traced it back to an injury that I sustained in the nasal cavity. Okay. And what I understand now is I'm leaking cerebral spinal fluid.
Okay.
Every night.
Okay.
So it has to do with my fluids. If I drink too much fluid, it can make it worse. But anyway, it oozes water.
Interesting. So, Dr. Pate,
what I'm trying to figure out is I had handled my allergies. I have taken the thyroid, and I take quite a bit of it. And I've been on the diet religiously and very carefully. And I'm thinking, let's see, I'm 61 now.
Okay. Have the doctors or the medical professionals?
No, I really don't want to try that.
What I wanted to ask was, have they identified this this structure that you say is located here at the top of your nose, presumably here at this barrier, the CSF barrier? You said that it's leaking.
It's leaking.
So has that been visualized? Who told you that it was CSF that was causing the...
I've done a lot of studies. I've been at it 8 years trying to figure it out.
Okay, Dr. Pete.
Just a few weeks ago, I was talking to a girl who had been having that for at least several months, but her symptoms went back several years since late puberty years. And it's closely associated with high estrogen to progesterone ratio. The pregnenolone, DHEA, testosterone, and other androgens are protective, so it isn't just progesterone, but estrogen makes the blood vessels leaky, and various types of inflammation can set off that leakiness. It isn't necessarily an injury. This girl that I recently talked to didn't have any identified injury. It was just closely associated with PMS symptoms. And a vitamin D deficiency is one of the things that can increase the leakiness of the membranes. Has yours been tested?
It was up very high at one time, the vitamin D. I brought it down, I think, to more of a normal range. It was up in the 80s, 90s. So I thought maybe 50s would be safer.
Yeah,
do you watch your calcium to phosphate ratio in your diet?
I have one meal a day, and it's done with the gelatin, so I'm very careful with that. And I drink 2 quarts of milk, and then, of course, the orange juice.
And have you ever had your estradiol to progesterone ratio tested?
I really don't want to do any puncturing to my body, so I don't quite know what else to do there.
Okay.
I'd rather guess on that, but I will. I'll go ahead and...
Have you tried supplementing pregnenolone or progesterone?
Yes. It was due to an injury. It was a ballooning endocranial adjustment to my nose because my jaw got dislocated. So I wake up every night at about 2 or 3, and I understand that the brain or the body makes cerebral spinal fluid at that time. And so the best thing I can do is drink coffee and sit in a bathtub for about 40 minutes, and then it'll drain out, and then I can go back to sleep. But
that's definitely the time of day where you're most subjected to cortisol in terms of low blood sugar. Have you experimented with making sure?
Definitely. I eat a lot of sugar.
Okay,
now.
All right. So it's not...
What about antihistamines?
I don't take antihistamines.
If coffee helps, what about aspirin?
I take aspirin. I take three tablets a day.
Mm-hmm.
I space it out, and with the K, of course.
Well,
what about cyproheptadine, Dr. Pete?
That I think is the safest antihistamine because it also takes down serotonin excess.
I tried that and then I got restless legs, so I could try it again, but it really didn't help me sleep very well.
Didn't you say, Dr. Pete, that you'd like to recommend like a tenth of the normal dose?
After you've used a few of the typical doses of 1 or 2 milligrams, it seems that you get more sensitive to it and can get a good reaction from a tenth of a milligram.
Got it. Okay. I'm going to try it. Thank you so much for your help. I love the diet. The best diet in the world. Okay. I mean, I'm very healthy, but this is quite a conundrum.
Yeah.
One other substance that has some antihistamine, anti-leakiness effects is Imodin, either from cascara or rhubarb root.
Okay. I do take cascara. Can I take just a bunch of it?
No.
No. Well, I do. It keeps my bowels moving very well, and I appreciate it very much.
How much? You said you are using pregnenolone, did you?
I do use some pregnenolone.
How
I
use
those little scoops. I use 2 scoops.
Well,
is that not enough?
I don't know what size a scoop is.
What is that size, please? Probably 150 milligrams.
Okay. When I first tried it, I brought back a kilogram from Syntex in Mexico, and I felt so much better on 100 or 300 milligrams. I wanted to see if it was safe to recommend, and so I ate about 3,000 milligrams a day for a year and felt great. Didn't find any side effects, and studies on rats in which they gave a rat about 10,000 milligrams in a single dose, they didn't see any harmful side effects. So,
and I noticed personally that 100 milligrams I didn't notice anything with, but 350 milligrams, then I said, okay, now I notice an effect from this pregnenolone, a very positive effect.
And it would be good, you know, despite your reservations about being punctured for phlebotomy, it would be good to know your progesterone to estradiol ratio to be reasonably scientific about the whole approach to it, because you might have a very low progesterone to estrogen ratio, which is what Dr. Pete's coming from, I think, in terms of estrogen being totally responsible for inflammation, and that inflammation and leakiness that is governed by estrogen's effects on the vasculature may well be a contributory factor to what you'll experience at nighttime.
And if you look into life extension, you can get some blood work ordered. They'll order blood work for you without a doctor. So if you don't want to go see an MD, then call Life Extension up.
Very good.
They'll order you blood tests.
Right.
Okay.
I do have a doctor I can get it from.
We have 2 more callers, so in order to be fair with these people, I need to...
I appreciate your time. Thank you, Dr.
Thank you for your call.
You're amazing. Thank you.
Okay, next caller. Where are you from, and what's your question?
Oh, I'm from Laytonville, and I have a question and a clarification first. At the beginning of the show, you mentioned Chomsky. Were you referring to Noam Chomsky, the linguist?
Correct, yeah.
Wow, okay. You didn't say his first name. So
I think Dr. Pete mentioned, he might have mentioned his first name.
Okay, I tuned in a little late.
No problem.
My question is this. I'm 76. I've been on the bioidentical estrogen progesterone for 20 years.
Right.
I'm just using the E2 and E3 forms of the estrogen, not the E1, topical cream, really low dose, and 50 to, I don't know if you want the numbers, with 50 of the progesterone. And I use 0.5 gram twice a day, and it keeps the hot flashes and night sweats away.
And you are, and now,
what do you think of the bioidentical?
Dr. P.
In the 1930s and 1940s, Alexander Lipschutz tested on various animals the effects of very small doses of estrogen, and he saw that if that small dose was continuous, it would be carcinogenic to every tissue he looked at. Brain,
was that
kidney,
bioidentical
lung, so
estrogen?
Yes, bioidentical. But he found that if you interrupted it regularly, the way the body does with the
menstruation,
the monthly
ovulation,
progesterone, the luteal phase where you have progesterone in huge amounts for 2 weeks, that interrupts the carcinogenic effect of estrogen. So even a big surge of estrogen once a month isn't carcinogenic as long as you're protecting it and knocking it out of cells with good dose of progesterone. So it doesn't matter that the dose of estrogen is small. It's the discontinuity that is protective.
And Dr.
If I interrupt it,
Dr. Pete, would you not also say that it's estrogen which is more responsible for hot flashes?
Actually, the estrogen turns on nitric oxide, which is a vasodilator, and causes leakiness of the blood vessels. So,
is that all three? You know, there's three estrogens, and you're using them all as one.
They all have the same effects, but at different doses. The estriol is about 10 times weaker than estradiol, and so many doctors prescribe a dose such as maybe 100 micrograms or up to 1 milligram of estriol to get the same effect that they would get from maybe 20 or 30 micrograms of estradiol. But it's still harmful if you don't interrupt it.
Well, how long do you interrupt it for?
Oh, I'm not sure, but something approaching the body's 2 weeks is probably ideal, but I think a week with a progesterone supplement is probably safe enough.
Okay, well, so you don't see much difference between the synthetic estrogens and the bioidentical then?
Oh, no, estradiol is the powerful natural one. The ethinyl estradiol is the
estrone.
The added group makes estradiol simply stay in your body longer, 17 times longer.
Which one is that, E1, E2, or E3?
The ethinyl estradiol is one used in so many birth control pills. And it's
no,
most
but I
toxic.
Mean...
But the estradiol is the natural...
Is that E1 or E2 or E3?
That's E2.
So what would happen if I eliminated the E2?
That's the strongest one, so it's safer with the lower dose. E3 is the weakest. Well, E1 and E3 are both weak.
So why don't you try cutting out E2 and just using the E3 for 2 weeks out of the month and using the progesterone the whole cycle and see what happens with your hot flashes.
That's interesting. Well, I'll have to go through all the night sweats and hot flashes.
Well, you might not. You might find that you don't have any at all.
That's the point.
You mean if I just go right on to the new regimen?
Yeah, because the estrogen is what causes the hot flashes and the progesterone is what stops it. So once your system gets used to the new regimen, then maybe you won't have any more hot flashes. But we do have another caller on the line.
We could maybe squeeze in one more quick call.
I don't know if we can. We'll just try.
Caller, you're on the air.
Where are you from and what's your question? We've got to be quick. You've got about 2 minutes.
Hello, my name is Peter. I'm from San Francisco.
Go ahead, Peter. 2 minutes.
All right. My question is related to the estrogen research. I understand that there are certain substances in plastics like EPA that are estrogenic in nature. I'm wondering if there are certain types of foods, maybe more acidic or more basic, that are more likely to leach plastic or these substances into the food.
Yeah.
Dr. Pete?
No, I don't know of any such effects of the pH of the food metabolism, but it's important to keep your protein and your B vitamins up. Those are the main things that deficiency of will allow the liver to let estrogen build up in your body. Protein and B1 especially are the anti-estrogen nutrients.
And another research fact that my colleague, a friend from Oxford University, found out about plastic water bottles is that if they're room temperature, they leak less plasticizers into the water. If they're cold or frozen, they become brittle and leach much more plastic compounds
and
into the water.
I think with the advent of this information of plastics leaching estrogenic mimics into the food and into the liquid they carry, I think there's much more effort now to produce HDPE and other plastics which are not...
Yeah, but not in to-go food. I mean, they're not going to use that high-quality plastic in to-go foods. But so that might apply to your food that you buy out of plastic containers. If it's in the refrigerator, it's going to be leaching more plastics into the food.
Well, anyway, Dr. Pete, thank you so much for your time, Dr. Pete. We'll just sign off with letting people know how to find you and a bit more information about next month.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. Okay, so for those of you who tuned in this month, thanks for your calls. Next month, we're going to continue the subject. We didn't really get into it too much, but we'll break it down in full detail. Carla Rothenberg's expose on the lies purported by the estrogen industry and why progesterone is as anti-inflammatory as Dr. Pete has been saying for a long time now. Okay, so we can be reached Monday through Friday, 1-888-WBM-HERB. For those people who want to find out more about Dr. Pete, if they've never heard him before, his website, www.raypete.com, is full of referenced articles. So plenty of different information about lots of different situations there that are referenced. And then also on YouTube, if people want to tune in on YouTube to listen to any of these shows, I think every one of them is on YouTube now. And I'm doing my best to get the 2016 and the early 2017 programs on our website. Anyway, thanks for those for you've tuned in, and all of you listening out there, the Pledge Drive's coming up in July, so if you like this kind of show, this alternative show, you know, it's just not the mainstream, if you want to keep hearing this, support the station.